Welcome to Top Advisor Marketing, where you will learn how to become a prolific online influencer, attract more ideal clients, and grow your practice. Brought to you by Top Advisor Podcasting, a done-for-you podcasting solution built just for trusted advisors. And now, your co-hosts of Top Advisor Marketing, Kirk Lowe and Matt Halloran.
Hello and welcome to episode number 45, To Book or To White Paper. Today, Kirk and I are going to break down the differences between writing a book and writing a white paper. But before we get into that, Kirk, you had said before we started recording that you had a couple of things that you wanted to share with our audience.
Yeah, I do. And you and I have been talking about this for the last couple of weeks, and it's growing even over the last couple of weeks. And one of the reasons that we started podcasting was just to get our voice out there, have fun, let people get to know us. And I think probably the most important thing of all was to inspire advisors to feel like this was a good medium. Mm-hmm. So it might sound a bit odd that we're talking about books and white papers, and here I am promoting podcasting. But I'm really proud of the feedback we're getting and the inspiration, because we're getting a lot of calls about from advisors who are really excited. We're working with advisors right now who thought and were concerned about how good they would be at podcasting. Every single one of them is evolving. They are all getting opportunities they wouldn't have gotten or seem to have been on hold in their careers. They're getting opportunities with centers of influence in particular. And they seem to me to be, some of them to be kind of going for it more in their businesses. And I think maybe that's the fun side of it.
Sure.
Getting some good exposure. I can't say a lot of them have had big pipeline successes, like, you know, people lined up, you know, downloading their papers. But there's so many wins with podcasting, as there are the two things we're going to talk about today. So I'm pretty excited. I think we're accomplishing exactly what we wanted to do. What I didn't realize was going to be as big as how many people want to be on our podcast, too. That just keeps growing.
We have over 20 guests who want to be on our podcast, this podcast. But Kirk, I think you're right. What I have found as the person who's interviewing a lot of these advisors is since we're talking in a different way about what they do, they're just really dialing in on their messaging. Like, they're just more confident in saying, this is who I am. This is what I do. This is what makes me unique and different. Because we talk about that on every single solitary podcast. Have you noticed that too?
Absolutely. You know, I just remembered another cool thing that's happening too, or happened last week, is we have a financial operational / marketing personality in Canada who's been speaking on the circuit for years. And he has expressed his desire to kind of pitch in here and be the voice of Canadian financial advisors doing podcasting. So when you put yourself out there, and you're doing stuff and you're having fun, it's incredible all the little opportunities that come to the surface, and people who might not have thought to call you before, like a center of influence. Mm-hmm. Says, you know, that topic you talked about last week, oh my gosh, I've got like 10 clients who need to be better at that. I need to get you in here to meet with them. Mm-hmm. Can you do a talk? Or, you know, I'm just going to share your podcast with them all. Be ready for some calls, that kind of thing. Just so many things. Anyway, we got a great topic today. It's one I've had many conversations about, and you and I talked about some of your successes and to a degree lack of successes, or things that didn't work as well as you had hoped with your two books. So I want to start off by asking you, first of all, can you name the two books that you've written?
Yeah. So I wrote The Social Media Handbook for Financial Advisors and The 99 Best Ideas for Financial Advisors. Very original titles.
When was the social media book published?
2012.
5 years ago. So I'm curious, how many things in that book, because it's social media. Uh-huh. Social media changes about every year, uh-huh, like something pretty significant. How much of that book is 100%? How much of that book is still relevant on a scale of 1 to 10?
The philosophical aspects of it, which is really how I wrote the book, is still quite applicable. But we also did a step-by-step screenshot, because that's what Bloomberg wanted me to do. And all of those are obsolete. I mean, the GUI, the user interface, is not the same at all.
Okay, so each of those two things down and give a score out of 1 to 10.
So the philosophical relevance, I would say I'm a good 7 or 8. And then with the step-by-steps up, I'm at a 2. I mean, it's that bad.
We just killed. We're not trying to kill the sales of your book.
It's not even in print anymore.
It's a good lesson, right? It's interesting. And we're going to get into some. So, and the 99 tips?
The 99 best ideas. Yeah. Oh, that's still selling like hotcakes. I hand that out. I sell them when I'm speaking. I get inquiries on a regular basis. I'm probably, you know, I sell them digitally. And so that's still, I mean, that's a 9 out of 10. I wrote the book. It's very, very simple. It's a quick read. I set it up kind of like a comic book. That one's self-published. So there's a huge difference between what I was able to do with the first book and what I was able to do with the second book.
Cool. Just so you know, all of our Canadian listeners don't know what hotcakes are. We call them pancakes.
Well, we call them pancakes too, but the saying isn't selling like pancakes. Is that what you say up north?
No, but you guys throw that in there and it's like, what? Hotcakes? Wow. I don't even know how well pancakes sell, but apparently they sell a lot.
Well, they do.
But only if they're really hot.
That's true. That's it. You got to have hotcakes, man. That's the way it is. So
yeah, but guess what? We have fresh maple syrup for them.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have maple syrup festivals all over the place, like a couple kilometers up the road, right time of the year, and they're pulling it right out of they're boiling it right there.
Well, right. See, but you just lost the whole American audience because you just said a couple kilometers up the road. So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. All right. So let's get back to the book, man.
Okay, man. So advantage, what are some of the advantages? You got some listed here in our mind map or following.
I do. Well, first off, it was a huge goal of mine. The first book that I wrote, The Social Media Handbook, I mean, that was just a big, you know, almost like a bucket list thing. It was a huge confidence booster for me, especially when, so Wiley was the original person that I put the book proposal into. They had actually contacted me after an investment news article about writing a book on social media or communications. It got me a bunch of speaking gigs, like right out of the bat, right out of the gate, which was great. You know, it really did show that I was an expert, especially when Bloomberg Finance picked up the book, which then changed a lot, which we should probably spend a little bit of time talking about. I made a little bit of money on the book from the book itself, but I put 7 months of time into it. So I really lost my shirt on the book. I didn't, it wasn't there to be a profit center for me. It was a bucket list thing for me, and it was massive credibility, which it really still has given me. And the expert guest request, Kirk, I got, you know, I was being interviewed Wall Street Journal, Financial Times in England. I've been interviewed all over the world. I'm on social media for financial services professionals, India, all over the States, pretty much every trade magazine. And, you know, that book doesn't have the evergreen aspect that I was kind of hoping it would, which was a great question you asked me at the beginning. But the second book, The Social Media Handbook for Financial Advisors, which took me probably 9 months because I had to do all of the editing because that was a self-published book.
9 months.
Mm-hmm.
That's a long time. I don't know if I could stay focused for 9 months.
Well, there's huge discipline, and I'm glad that you say that. If you're going to write a book, you have to write every day, and you have to build that into your schedule. I wrote every single solitary day for 9 months. Sometimes, you know, my goal was to write 1,000 words a day, 1,500 words a day. So I would get up 4 o'clock in the morning, and I would be writing, you know, whatever I possibly could. It usually took me about a half an hour to get into the flow of writing, and then I would write down a good, you know, 1,500 words. But what the other thing that is difficult for people who've never written a book, writing the book is very easy. Rewriting the book is the pain in the butt. I mean, you have to rewrite every single solitary word because your initial thoughts are not clear and succinct as you want them to be. And unless you have a really good editor, which by the way is horribly expensive, it's a real huge pain in the butt. And my wife,
really interesting that you said the article led to the book deal.
Yeah.
Which lends to what we were just talking about, the podcast.
Yeah.
Opens up so many opportunities. Anyway. Yeah. So any other advantages there? Those are good ones.
Well, I think they are good ones. You have a lot more control when you self-publish a book than when you are published by a publishing company. The turnaround time is generally a lot faster from final edit to production. Final edit to production at Wiley and at Bloomberg was about 4 months before I had a hard copy of the book. They gave me a whopping 7 free copies of the book to hand out, whereas when I self-publish the book, I have 2,000 copies of it. But personally, not just the digital copies that I have control over and I can give away for free or whatever. So, you know, they're
so if you were going to do it again, you would do self over professionally published?
If I just want to do something short, quick, easy to the point, like my 99 best ideas, I would absolutely just self-publish. But if I was looking for expertise, if I was looking for speaking requests, quotes from major news outlets, then I would once again write a very complete book proposal and submit it to publishers.
I was thinking one of the advantages was that you would have it would have great, better shelf life than a paper. Mm-hmm. But if it's not evergreen,
right?
I mean, has great, like, lasting, potentially everlasting mm-hmm. credibility.
Well,
more or less, unless your whatever you talked about became.
Yeah, absolutely.
A negative thing or wrong down the road. But.
Well, the nice thing about the first book, even though that it doesn't have a lot of evergreen content, is I was the first person in our industry to be published by a recognized publisher on the philosophy of social media. And, you know, that still has a lot of standing today because a lot of my competitors, our competitors and friends actually, have written books since then, but they weren't first out. And so it still feels like a big deal and a good accomplishment for me.
Yeah. Do you like, when you were writing, do you like to write with your socks on or your socks off?
Socks on. I listen to a very specific kind of music and I sit in a very specific chair.
Okay. I had to know that.
Yeah.
I have one of those minds. I got to know the details sometimes. So the potential profit, I guess, with a book is bigger.
No, you know what? Nobody makes money on books. I'm sorry. Unless you're a Stephen King, you know, or somebody like that, it's so hard to be a profitable Malcolm Gladwell, you know, those sort of people who have just these huge followings, you know, they make money, but most other people don't.
Who are we aspiring to have on our show that will tell us we're successful on our podcast?
I don't know, dude. I just reached out to three people who are huge within our industry, Bill Cates, Bob Berg, and Michael Kitsis, dude. I mean, we got the top three, some of the most recognizable people in our industry who were so excited when I asked them to be on the podcast. Some of them already have podcasts. Some of them are, you know, have just unbelievable networks. And I don't think there is anybody else.
I have somebody.
Oh, do you really? Who?
Simon Sinek.
Okay. Yeah. But he doesn't do fine. Oh, you know what? I would like to get Robert Cialdini, Dr. Robert Cialdini, who did the Principles of Influence book that I refer to a lot. Yeah.
Okay.
You know what, dude? Why don't we just freaking ask? Worst thing they can say is no. All right. Well, let's talk about the disadvantages because I don't want everybody to go away thinking that this was all, you know, rose-colored glasses. The first major disadvantage is my wife told me if I write another book, she's going to divorce me because I was so freaking stressed out. I didn't sleep very well. I was always writing. You know, I would interrupt meals because I would have an idea and I would go dictate it. You know, the other big disadvantage of a book is it's long, right? And that's why I wrote the 99 Best Ideas the way that I did, was because it's short. I mean, you can read 4 pages and get great information that's actionable. Like I said, you know, you want to make sure that it's evergreen. When you're writing a book, especially financial advisors who write a book, you cannot talk about what's happening right now because the climate change, investment climate changes so much that your book will be obsolete very, very, very quickly. It is very expensive. You know, unless you're getting sponsored by a publishing house, your out-of-pocket cost to self-publish can be anywhere from $7,500 to about $100,000. I have an advisor who I helped write his book, and I think he spent $65,000 from beginning to end, and that does not include his time. Time is the other biggest problem. In discipline, if you don't have that time and discipline that you can really focus, don't even begin.
I had a client who wrote a book probably about 10 years ago, and we hired a guy to get him number one on Amazon
mm-hmm.
and in a small category. It's an interesting little strategy. I don't know if it still happens, but you get a whole bunch of your friends and colleagues and everybody holds off the launch and then mm-hmm. they launch it all at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And they put it in a relatively obscure category as they can in Amazon. So that if you're number one in over a course of 24 hours, you get number one status, and then you can put that on your book.
So that's exactly what I did with the 99 Best Ideas. So that's the exact strategy I used. I was number one in 3 different categories, business consulting for financial advisors, financial advisor education, and financial advisor marketing. And it's a great strategy. I think I gave away, because Amazon's got a great program for that. I gave away 3,000 copies of my book within 24 hours
mm-hmm.
from a huge marketing splash like that. Yeah. Great visibility.
I find that books, they're a little bit tougher to integrate. So when I'm consulting on websites for clients, the book is like it's a cumbersome call to action.
Oh, yeah.
Mostly because it's what I call a tier two to tier three engagement. So it's a much bigger commitment. Oh my gosh, do I really want to read this book? I mean, it's great that they have one. Mm-hmm. So I like to position it more as a credibility thing than order your copy here and take up a lot of real estate on the front page, because I don't think it's great like that. Like, a white paper is so much easier to get people to engage in. However, the book does fulfill that credibility better than a paper. That's, one of my big questions here today is, depending on what you're trying to do with what you want to create, a book versus a white paper, could dictate, what your ultimate choice is. But.
Well, Kirk, I think that's the key. And we talk about this in marketing, in not just marketing in general, but podcasting specifically. If you don't have a specific outcome that you're looking for, and if that is not your mantra, your foundation for what you're going to talk about or what you're going to write, then you're really lost. You know, the first book had a very, very simple message. And in fact, you could scrap 248 pages or whatever it is for the opening line of the book, which is, communication is fundamentally changed. You have to communicate to your audience when they're there in the medium in which they want to consume your material. That's the entire philosophy of the book. And I still say that all the time. And that's why podcasting is powerful. But let's switch gears here, because you and I are very, very different when it comes to this, because I came to you, I'd never written a white paper ever, right? When we first met, you are a prolific writer. You're writing all the time. I came with two books. And when I met you, 24 months ago, you had probably north of 20 white papers. So let's talk about the white papers. We're going to switch gears. What are the advantages? So we just talked about the advantages of writing a book and the disadvantages of writing a book. Let's talk about the advantages of writing a white paper, because you are a white paper expert. In fact, we have a template, not really a template, it's more of a formula of how to write a white paper. And at some point, we're going to put that on the podcast, but it's part of one of our new programs that we're launching. But go ahead, Kirk.
So I've been in this business for 17 plus years. Do you know when I wrote my first paper? It was entitled Financial Marketing for the 21st Century, I believe. It was about 15,000 to 20,000 words long. Mm-hmm. And I was pretty green. It's the first thing I did. So I wrote it basically as soon as I left the financial planning business, mm-hmm. marketing role, and becoming a financial advisor, that stuff. When I realized I didn't want to be a financial advisor and I didn't want to work under a financial advisor who didn't have ambitions as grand as mine. Mm-hmm. And that's what I did. It was my, what does Jerry Maguire call that paper he wrote?
I don't remember, but I know exactly what you're talking about. I'm sure our listeners do too.
I just ripped and let it out. And what was funny is, didn't get much uptake in Canada because I didn't get any author opportunities in Canada. So the publishing places in Canada were much stricter. It was more of a boys club. In the US, it was way more free market, open market. If you can write and you can provide us content, their model was way ahead of the Canadian model. In my opinion, the Canadian models were all a lot of paid models. And if you didn't have a book or you weren't speaking on the speaking circuit, you weren't smart. Mm-hmm. So don't come here, which really, led to a lot of great new ideas. Severe sarcasm there. Anyway, so, that really launched me, even though, I hadn't figured everything out. And I was I talked a lot about websites quickly into, hey, if you have a website but it doesn't tell a story. I mean, I've been preaching this stuff for a long time, and way before anybody else seemed to be doing it, to be quite honest. Mm-hmm. And so that paper, there's some stuff that we did a podcast on not too long ago, the Hits, Touches, and Moments.
Absolutely.
Right?
That was from that paper.
Heard of that, yeah.
Yeah.
I was thinking, how do you, anyway, it was a lot of fun, but it launched my business. And, over 5 years, I think I at one point had counted about 2,000 downloads.
Wow.
Which back then was a lot harder to get people to download because
they weren't downloading
channels. Yeah, it was a big deal. So that was really a huge part of my career, writing something like that. Mm-hmm. But, for me, I started writing a book. Ray and I had weekly sessions where we were diving into all the stuff we'd already done, pulling it all together. And it was fun, but it was overwhelming. And we ended up, having other things that were more important and stopped. But I've never been stopped from writing a paper. Mm-hmm. Because I can maintain a focus long enough to write a paper. And I've gotten to a place where I know how to write a paper, add more value, format it so that if somebody wants to skim, they can still get something out of it. There are a lot of things I understand about writing a white paper, having written so many, that I'm very efficient at it. Our designers are really good at, you know, bringing it to life visually. And they know how to format. So when you do a couple, it's kind of like writing a book. Either your next one, you'd be better at it. Writing a paper, because you can do so many, I think you can get better quicker, if that makes sense.
Well, it does. And goodness gracious, if you all haven't seen what a white paper should look like, then you need to go to topadvisormarketing.com and double check and just see what is on our page that is really all of the different blogs and white papers.
A lot of them are in the Advisor U.
In Advisor U. In fact, that's probably a better place for them to go to see them, aren't they? Because Advisor U's, okay.
I mean, there's ones that are older that aren't quite as good, but there's always good stuff in them. So, but the newer ones like Death by Referrals and the podcasting guide, there's some serious value in those things.
Anyway. All right, let's talk about some more of the advantages. So you were talking about the fact that you and Ray started writing a book and then you got kind of sidetracked. One of the big advantages is that you really know how to do it. You've got a great formula. You've got a great format. What else is a good way or a good advantage of a white paper?
I mean, it's quick to market. So you can have a thought. You can be more specific. So if there's something hot or something that you're working on, you can write a paper and move that concept along. With a book, there's typically a lot of concepts, or it takes so long, you may have missed something, or you know, something evolved or changed. So I find that from a marketing perspective, and what's hot and what's interesting and what you're working on and what clients are really caring about in the moment, you can get there really fast. It's incredibly cost effective. You want to have a good proofreader, but you do not have to string. Like, the hardest part about a book is taking six main thoughts and making them all connect and flow.
Yep.
And that's not easy to do. In fact, I think it's quite difficult to do, which is one of the biggest reasons you have to have somebody, so that as you go through, your thoughts are all consistent. Because sometimes, anyway, so there's a lot there. So cost effective, quick to market, highly targeted. It's an easy commitment. So if I say I'm going to write a white paper, I'm not going to kill other things in my life, my relationship and client obligations. So it's great like that. I think probably one of the most important things is how well a white paper integrates into digital marketing, because you can put a link right in there. Now you can do that stuff with Kindle and Kobo and online versions of books now, but typically the integration, the digital ability or integration, it makes a white paper, in my opinion, incredibly good idea. And one of the really neat things is it's easy to update. So if you find an error, I don't know if I've ever read a book that didn't have a grammatical error in it. That thing's printed, you're done.
Yep.
Right? So with a white paper, it's extremely easy to go in, make that change and republish it, and whoever gets the new version is good to go. And or if something changes and you need to add something, or if you want to add more value because you figured something out, you can just go back and do that. And you don't need to it doesn't have to be a revised copy of it. You know, 10 years later, we've done big revision, and you have to print 2,000 of them, right? You just fix it and you post it where they're downloading it. It's very, very simple. So, I mean, those reasons for me but why I've always focused on writing white papers. And for me, I don't know that I'll ever write a book. I don't know that it's that important to me. If I did, I think it would be more of a, to be quite honest, more of an ego and a publicity thing. Like, how do I take it to the next level from a PR standpoint? But I don't really need that, because I already get those opportunities.
Right.
So it would be if I was going bigger. But I could see if a financial advisor, because their audience is so much larger than ours is, working with advisors, that may be a something that they maybe aspire to, and makes a little bit more sense. But
yeah, but look at who their competition is. So I want to talk about the competitive advantages of a white paper versus writing a book for financial advisors. You're up against Dave Ramsey, Susie Orman, you know, now Tony Robbins. I mean, look at all of the different people who are writing these best-selling books. And if you think that yours is going to be there, unless you're going to spend millions, which is what they do, in advertising, you're not going to get that sort of traction. And Kirk, one of the points that you've made to me in the past, and we talked about this before we started recording today, is what has more value? 10 niche papers, very focused papers that are speaking to a specific audience, or one broad brush stroke book? What is your answer to that?
10 papers every day of the week.
Yeah.
There's so much we can do. For starters, we have our own library called Advisor U with all those papers. People need help in a lot of areas, and that helps. And they know they can go exactly where they feel like they need help. Mm-hmm. In a book, when you skip a chapter like that, everything's referring back and forth. You're kind of confused. Yes. What do I need to read back there? Mm-hmm. It's not as simple. With a paper, you can complete a thought. You can refer to other papers,
sure,
which is always a good idea. But you can complete your thought, help them, whatever it is that they came to download your paper for. So,
well, I want to ask you a technical question, and I've never asked you this before. For a book, there are generally specific word counts that you're looking for. Is there a word count that you're always striving towards with the white papers you write?
I'm going to introduce a whole new concept right now.
Okay.
That has come up a lot lately. And that is, when I talk about white papers with certain financial advisors who actually know what a white paper originally was, it was more of a research paper.
Right.
These are not, I don't advocate for advisors writing white papers. I do know advisors who've written very technical research documents, and the consumers will not want to consume those. So stay away from that.
Yeah.
What I call these is light papers.
Huh.
And
Wait. Light as in L-I-G-H-T or L-I-T-E?
L-I-T-E is okay. How I'm spelling them.
Huh. Well, so yeah, if you look at the origins of a white paper, it was a non-peer-reviewed professional article. That's what it was originally. And so we're not really looking for peer reviews here. We're looking for, I like that, Kirk. That's really powerful, a light paper.
So I'm going to give you a word count now, too. So
okay.
An absolute minimum, in my mind, would be 1,500. So if you write an article for an online portal, so Forbes, for instance, they typically want 800 to 1,200. I would say at a minimum 1,500, upwards of 4,000. When I think you start getting over 4,000, starts becoming more than somebody might be ready to do. But hear me out. 1,500 could be really powerful if you have a lot of exercises or questions or value where somebody can solve what you're telling them needs solving, right? So we'll do, have we done an anatomy of a white paper in one of our podcasts?
We have not yet.
So we'll do that. We'll do that. Stay tuned. We got a lot of stuff going on, but we'll do that. I have that anatomy all done because we do it with everybody, but I've been working on a blog post for that. However, it's not a big priority, but I'll get it done. And so stay tuned. But the anatomy of a white paper, how to write one. One of the big things is after you present an obstacle or a challenge that somebody is facing, whether it's how they view something or what somebody's told them, like myths, which happen a lot in financial planning, financial mm-hmm. world, as everybody knows. If you can present an idea to solve them or to ask questions to start thinking in more depth about it, that adds a tremendous amount of value to a light paper. So let me give you an example. I wrote an article called 10 Reasons Your Financial Advisor Website is Useless.
Mm-hmm.
I think I rephrased it, but that's still maybe looming somewhere. And it's on our blog. And I posted it through LinkedIn. And a financial advisor gave me some feedback through LinkedIn, which is one of the great reasons to share your stuff and your thoughts, because sometimes people challenge you and it changes your business. So I owe this guy a beer when I see him someday. I'll tell you what I did for him anyway. So what he said was, great article. Like so many I read, you were able to tell me all the things that I'm doing wrong. He said, but like most articles I read, you haven't told me how to fix it.
Yeah.
And I was so grateful. So what I did was I responded to this gentleman, Michael S., and I sent him a note and said, look, Michael, over the next 5 weeks, I'm going to reply to the two of the ideas at a time with ways that you can solve them. So I wrote a series of five follow-up articles, and they got a lot of reads. And then what I did with his permission is I actually took his site, which was a really good idea of what not to do. In so many areas, asked him for his permission, and I did a 35-minute video, which is in our Advisor U, on everything he was doing wrong with his website. And he graciously gave me permission to do that, and I handed it off to him. And to be honest, I don't know if he's ever done anything about it. I checked about a year after, and he hadn't, unfortunately for him, but in his and all the people who need his help. Anyway, so that really changed my mind on how I write, and I always, as often as I can, where it makes sense, I try to, which is almost all the time, try to give people ways that they can think about something differently.
Yeah.
or find a resource to help them, or give them some questions or an exercise, or even sometimes a vendor, somebody that can solve it for them.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes that's us. Sometimes it's other places or other people.
Okay, let's switch gears and talk about some of the disadvantages of a white paper. There don't seem to be as many as the disadvantages of writing a book, but let's break some of those down before we wrap up today.
Well, the most important one is there's no book signings in fancy malls. Like, yeah. I never got to do that.
By the way, I never got to do that either, but that's okay.
People coming up to you thinking, anyway.
Actually, hold on. That's something that still happens to me. It is like, I just spoke this morning and the owner of the company had purchased my 99 best ideas for all of their advisors. And a couple of them came up to me and wanted me to sign it. And I'm just like, what, you know, really? But I mean, I appreciate it. But, how many people have asked you to sign your white paper?
Never.
Yeah.
But I've had several people hand me their books. And they say, oh, let me sign it. And I'm thinking, I don't want your signature. I just want your thoughts. But thank you.
Yeah. Come on, there's got to be some other disadvantage. Okay, I wish everybody could see this. He's literally scratching his head right now, searching for disadvantages.
Yeah, a slightly less profile, but slightly less credibility, to be honest. I mean, when you have a book, there's a definite status there that is more difficult to achieve when you don't have a book.
Sure.
I mean, people think you're smarter than me. Let's put it that way.
What?
Well, I'm not saying whether it's true or not. I'm just saying.
I don't know if I would agree with that at all, but that's all right.
I'm just having fun with you, my friend. So, I mean, there is it's hard to duplicate that, but you don't need that level of status most of the time. I do think there's different opportunities that may come from writing a book than would come from writing a bunch of light papers. But the advantage to writing light papers, I think, far outweighs books. So my consensus, and you probably want to tee this up, but I'm just running with it, is that in almost every case, based on goals and outcomes and impact on your business, whether that's how you feel about your business or how your clients see you as an expertise or a specialist, and how you use that to grow your practice from a marketing and sales perspective, I would go with multiple light papers every day of the week. If you only ever write one paper, the book would probably be better. But if you can write multiple light papers mm-hmm. in the moment about things that are highly specific to your audience, mm-hmm. your niche audience and your niche expertise, I think you win every day of the week.
Yeah. Well, I absolutely agree with you. And since you and I have been hanging out and working together, my ability to get my ideas out in a clear and succinct manner quickly has been liberating. It really, really has. You know, I would have great thoughts about, you know, something in my first book, and it would take 2 weeks for my editor to get back to me. Whereas now, since we've got such a great network of people, I come up with an idea, I write it up, I send it to you, or I send it to some other of our strategic partners. They give feedback on it. I can fix it immediately and then put it on the street in a timely manner. And financial advisors obviously have to go through the compliance process, but I say this a lot. Compliance isn't really the business prevention department. You're the business prevention department, because as long as you're not saying things that you know violate your compliance regulations, then you are okay. Yes, it might take a little while for it to get through compliance, but Kirk and I can tell you that the advisors that we work with currently who are writing white papers are getting unbelievable credibility from these. In fact, I mean, we talked about it before. You know, a gentleman who does a podcast and has written a great, great white paper landed a huge, huge client because the client was so excited that he wrote a white paper. Now, if Joe would have said, hey, I wrote a book, the guy might have been like, yeah, okay, well, all right, everybody writes a book. But this white paper, it's just such a great, soft and warm and great way to build a relationship with people, and that a book really isn't. A book is a little bit more distant. It's obviously a lot more in depth. So what are the closing comments? So let's rubber meets the road here. I'm sure there are a lot of advisors who are listening to this who maybe feel a little bit bummed out because they've always thought writing a book was a good idea.
It's just not as good idea as writing a whole bunch of light papers.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, man, don't, if that's what you were going to do, go do it. Right.
Well, as a person who was a coach for a really long time, I mean, if it's a goal of yours, strive towards that goal. But you can get to that goal a lot faster if you write 10 to 15 light papers and turn that into a book.
Here's a perfect example of why a light paper kicks butt, in my opinion. I said earlier we're going to do a podcast on anatomy of writing a light paper. Mm-hmm. I'm going to put that in the show notes. Because I don't know if it'll be a blog post or a paper, but I'm going to have it done by the time we launch this.
Okay.
I've got 2 weeks. Probably about the delay right now for us is about 2 weeks. We're launching one episode a week, and I'm going to get that done. So that'll be attached to the show notes.
Awesome.
And I know that that's a commitment. Like, that's a commitment I can do because it's not like writing a book. I'll make it good.
Right.
It's already probably half done. Anyway, I think that's – hopefully you guys get a lot out of that because writing a light paper – in fact, I'm going to rename it The Anatomy of a Light Paper.
I just think that's great, and I want to see how quickly that spreads throughout the industry because – it is a much more accurate description of what it really is. So to sum up, if it is a huge bucket list or idea or goal of yours to write a book, you should probably talk to Kirk or I about how to do it. If you want to get published by a big publishing house, there are some very specific steps that you have to do. If you want to self-publish, please talk to one of us because there's some huge pitfalls depending on who you self-publish with. Your out-of-pocket could be fundamentally different. But if you really want to learn how to write a light paper, when Kirk writes this new light paper, it's going to walk you through the formula. And please go to AdvisorU, take a look at the blogs that we have right now, because those blogs are basically light papers. And you can start feeling what those papers should be like. It's a great opportunity to hand out something short, sweet, and to the point to centers of influence. It is a great companion to a podcast. Here's my white paper. And by the way, if you'd like, you know, why don't you subscribe to my podcast? Because that way, you know, you can get these ideas in a little bit different format where I can unpack them a little bit more. All right. Closing statements. Kirk, what do you got?
I already did closing statements, didn't I?
Well, I don't know if you have any more after what I just said, if you're going to argue with me or, you know, tell me I'm crazy or missing the point.
I think it's a great, great topic. I hope everybody helps them find their way. That's
okay.
Which is the whole point of why we're doing this. Save you time, absolutely, energy, money, have more success with your decisions from a marketing perspective. Here, I got one now. Whatever you do with this decision, make sure it fits into your marketing.
There you go.
Make sure it's something you can sustain, you can get done and get moving. Because momentum is the most important part of marketing. Do stuff that'll last. Do stuff that builds on top of each other. Do stuff that's integrated. Do stuff that you can actually sustain and get done. I talk about that all the time. Yep. There you go.
All right. So if you have not subscribed to our podcast yet, please make sure that you click subscribe below. And if you have an opportunity to give us some comments, especially on iTunes, that would be magnificent. And it also gives us some good feedback on what we're doing right, what we're doing wrong, and what we can fix. So for Kirk Lowe, this is Matt Halloran, episode 45, To Book or Now, Light Paper. Thank you very much. We'll see you on the other side of the mic very soon.